This is the Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs meeting in hearing room A at 1 o'clock p.m. on March the 2nd, 1977.
First of all, I gave you a copy of the minutes of the subcommittee meeting in your book by 299, so you could see who was represented at the subcommittee meeting. As I understand, there's unanimity among all sides of this. The amendments basically continue the funding of the retroactive reserve at its current level, which is a 6-cent contribution from the employees and a 6-cent contribution by the employer per workman per day or part of the day that is worked. It also includes a repeal of the automatic transfer of the retroactive reserve fund to the administrative fund, July 1, 1977. If this is not done, then there's a good question whether the retroactive reserve fund, as far as the employee's 6-cent contribution, would exist after July 1, 1977. So in the section 3 here of the amendment, we're simply dropping out, but in no event later than July 1, 1977. There's no other language change. All the rest of the language is existing law. As I said, it does reestablish the subject employer contribution at 6 cents, which is its current level, and will repeal that contribution July 1, 1979, so that it would have to be looked at again by the next legislature. That's and all that the amendments do.
What's the reference to the 8 cents then?
Okay, the amendment to ORA 656506 is existing law. The only change is that we're bracketing out and deleting in the sentence, if at any time that portion of the funds dedicated to the retroactive reserve are no longer needed for that purpose, but in no event later than July 1, 1977, we're taking that out so that there will be, the employee's contribution will be there after July 1, 1977.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we're doing really is continuing the status quo for another 2 years.
Correct.
Something that's forward for 2 more years.
I would accept a motion on the amendment.
I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coase has moved the amendment. Is there any opposition?
Mr. Chairman, I presume there was testimony indicating that that was by virtue of the people that appeared, that it was generally agreed that it was a wise and necessary and advisable.
I think that everyone was convinced to the day, including representatives from the AOI and others, mm-hmm. that this was necessary. Mr. Edwards is shaking his head back there.
Everybody, all the audience nod their head.
I think that's the truth.
Hearing no opposition, I declare the amendment accepted. Anyone like to make a motion on the bill?
Chairman, I move the bill to the floor with it be passed as amended.
Senator Cole moves Senate Bill 299 be passed as amendment out. Let's call the roll.
Senator Carson?
Aye.
Senator Grinstead?
Aye.
Senator Cho?
Aye.
Senator Wyers?
Aye.
We'll assign that to Senator Groner. If you're here.
Beautiful. It's got to fill him up.
Wonderful.
Let's get a few more out there.
There's a 269 in here that I'd Senate Bill 301 is on schedule for work session.
These amendments come from the representatives of the Pacific Town Light Company and the Oregon Railroad Association. The bill itself will give immunity to all employers who are under the workers' compensation system for third-party actions against them. The point made by PP&L and the Railroad Association is that the type of services they render are at times hazardous, but are essential to the well-being of business people. So they enter into an agreement with those particular businesses in the situation of a spray line, for instance, that if one of their employees is injured by an act of the Railroad Association, for instance, they have signed an agreement where the employer of the hurt workman agrees to allow an indemnity action by the railroad against them to recover whatever their cost of the suit by the employee against the Railroad Association are. There is some question about how widespread these indemnity agreements are in the business world. We've only heard from PP&L and the Oregon Railroad Association. It's hard to assess how many other businesses consider these types of indemnity agreements necessary for the function of their business. But this would prohibit all indemnity actions except in the case of an agreement between PP&L and an employer or the Railroad Association and an employer or the various railroad lines and an employer regulated by separate chapters of ORS 757 and 760 speaking to the regulation of public utilities and railroads.
Question, how do you pin that down to just PP&L? Why wouldn't PGE or any other?
Well, these amendments were suggested by PP&L, but the exemption reads in terms of those associations, corporations, companies regulated by 757 and 760. Okay. So really all public utilities and all railroads would be covered since they are regulated under those chapters. But I wanted to express that these amendments did come from PP&L and the Railroad Association.
The amendments had the acceptance of the other members of the other groups that participated in the compromise committee.
You all participated in the conference, let's find that out.
Basically, those people that I mentioned, Bob Kennedy, the AFL, and PP&L and the Oregon Railroad Association.
were supportive of the
petition. Were supportive of the petition amendment. Perhaps Carl Frederick would have a perspective on this.
Any other discussion on the amendment?
Move the amendment.
Senate Thrill moves the proposed amendment to Senate Bill 301. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, amendments are adopted. What's your pleasure?
Could we, Mr. Chairman, could we have a review of the testimony that we had on the bill itself from the staff? Did you want to go over that?
Well, the policy behind this bill, I think, is that that workman's compensation was designed as a sole remedy, no-fault sole remedy type of compensation for employers, but employers have found themselves in the position of being liable both under the workman's compensation system to the employee and also liable for third party actions by a third party who was being sued by that person's employee and recovered. The third party would then sue the employer in a civil action and recover in a civil action, so that the employer paid by workman's compensation would both be liable under workman's compensation and also civilly by an indemnity or a contribution type action from the real tort feasor who would be a third party in this. And the workman of the employer would have recovered from the third party tort feasor. I think the policy is that it's based upon the concept of workman's compensation as a sole and exclusive remedy.
But under certain circumstances, we do allow the injured workman to sue the third party.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we have a lot of action against the third party, regardless of
we're not going to let that third party then come back against the original.
That's what this bill would do. Of course, in the case of the railroads, they're not covered by workman's compensation anyway. They're in a federal act, so they're totally outside the compensation system.
Well, not saying that I'm I don't want to vote on this because it's consistent with some. Just because it's consistent with some general policy of the workman's compensation law, because when the generality hits a certain point, then it almost gets too general or something to me. So I'm not saying I'm against this. I'm just trying to sort my thoughts, so maybe someone else on the committee can help me when I shut up. But it seems to me that. I don't quite see yet how we're helping the world by saying that this. I think I understand what we're talking about, and that is saying that if somebody comes around where a worker is working and hurts him, and the worker is able to recover against that outsider, let's call him, rather than third party, they will recover against that outsider. Maybe it's somebody driving onto the job site. I can't quite remember the case law. I can tell you the case law in this area as a student. And there are situations where outsiders are not considered third parties, and you can't sue separately. But there are situations where you can. So. I'm not sure this is a good example, but a worker is working on a construction job and somebody comes in there from another outfit with a truck and runs over him.
then the man can recover workman's compensation, but he can also sue that truck driver or that truck driver's company because it wasn't his employer. It's an outsider or a third party. Now, this law, if we pass this act, then we would say that the owner of that truck or the truck driver himself can't come back against the workman's employer to recover money that he lost. And I suppose there's another layer in this, and that is that it will get down to what insurance companies, whose insurance company can do what in terms of straightening out their liability. I can't see any reason on the surface of why I should be against it, but I can't see any particular reason why I would be for it either, because for the outsider to come back against the injured workman's original employer, he'd have to show that somehow the original employer was at fault, and that's why he ran over the guy. He wouldn't be able to just come back against him automatically. I've laid out my state of my confusion. You know, if you had time.
I might even guess there's a similar bill that does essentially the same thing in House Judiciary Committee, and it's being studied there. It also, subsection B of that new language would void all agreements and warranties contrary to the provisions of the paragraph. It is my impression that many companies do use a boilerplate indemnity type of agreement when they enter into contracts with other businesses. And so what I think one effect on this is speaking to how valid those boilerplate indemnity agreements are going to be. It would void them except in the case of public utilities and railroads, as I read the bill with the amendment.
Okay. I share a lot of confusion or concern. From a drafting standpoint, we have a double negative, if not a third negative, if I understand correctly. In other words, the whole sense of 656.018 is a negative, is an exemption, if you will. So in effect, that if you provide it under 656.017, then you're exempted from the provisions. Am I correct so far? Is it?
Well, it states that workman's comp is an exclusive liability.
So they're exempted from the third-party aspect. Is that the thrust of it?
Yes, specifically including third-party or outside actions for contribution and indemnity.
You're responsible. Okay. Except if you've got workman's comp, then you're not responsible. In other words, that's the thrust of unamended.
Yeah, if you're under workman's comp, you're subject employer, you're exempted from all other items, including actions for indemnity and contributions from an outside or third party source.
Now, we're adding an exemption to an exemption.
No, that's what the bill does. Currently, there is an action for contribution or indemnity. Currently, it is possible to sue an employer who is subject to workman's compensation. It is possible for an outsider to sue that employer for contribution or indemnity in a arising out of a tort situation that they themselves have been sued for.
What does the amendment we just adopted do to this exemption?
It would allow railroads and public utilities continue writing indemnity provisions in their contract, which would allow them to come against the other employer and get the money back if they might be out in a civil suit. The justification for that was that many times railroads have to do hazardous things such as spur lines that are essential to a person's business, and the railroad, they do a kind of equitable trade. Okay, we'll put in the negative hazards, we'll put it in, but we want ourselves covered by an indemnity agreement with you where we can sue you or recover money that we may be out in a tort action by one of your employees.
The point I was trying to read was that I guess a drafting standpoint, and that is that you've got, for instance, it will now read, except as specifically provided otherwise in such and such, such provided this section shall not apply. And it just seems to me to be a double, if not a triple negative, and you either have to be working in workman's comp full time or be a magician to fully understand it. The second question I have is, I'm not familiar with any other time where we have ever made an act accepted as to trial. Not claims made, not injury suffered, whatever, but what happens if you're in the midst of a trial and all actions tried subsequent? I'm looking at section 2, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's important that we do put in some beginning date or ending date, but I wonder if it's wise to select the trial date as opposed to the injury date or the filing date. I just
hope your trial opinion puts in the other moment because the trial docket's a lot shorter and bulk than it is.
And I think that's a bad place to leave it. Does anybody know why they use trial date? Class call?
The House Bill 2202, and that was sponsored by the Oregon State Bar, and they did make an amendment to the section 2 and the filing date.
Well, I thank you for the compliment, but it's really kind of obvious it would be almost impossible to administer fairly by hooking it to this.
It's too obvious that both bills coming from different states.
Do you have any other comments? Well, let's kind of what I asked Richard, is there any possibility or any advisability, I guess, of stating this in English directly rather than having it to the negative of third power? And I realize that's not your fault, but I think part of our confusion is directed the way it's drafted, which is not your fault or it's our previous fancy, and then another provider.
Sir, the question, have you planned to work with Rich? And if by the doing this meeting, could you keep work together for 15 or 20 minutes on this? Yeah. Maybe take it up the first thing Friday, another work session. Is that all right?
Sure.
All right. Meeting's adjourned.